Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Cinco de Mayo, Matt.
That's right. Happy Cinco de Mayo.
I saw Bullers was out and about, spreading the joy. So, how do little Luke and Mark celebrate Cinco de Mayo? Please don't give an answer that the suit would give. I mean, we all know what happened with Suit Light. All right.
Well, we started off the day by playing outside.
Okay, so let's get to the play-by-play call of the day.
Three-pointer won't go. Long rebound, Hero. 8-point game. We come up on the midway point, second quarter. Miami looking to take a 2-0 lead. Butler on a gorgeous backdoor cut.
And great cut and read there. We talked about the passing of Adebayo.
Spiro Dedis and Grant Hill on TNT last night. Easy win for the Heat as they win game two against the Sixers without Joel Embiid. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the all-important Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a service department that can handle routine inspections, diagnostics, whatever it may be. They handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Let's get to the NFL draft. And Matt Lombardo. Matt, welcome back. It's great to have you with us on the show.
Hey, happy to be here, Steve. Thanks for having me.
All right. Of everybody I've talked to about the draft, the one question I never asked anybody was about the first overall pick, Walker. Now, part of this may be my prejudice in seeing because, you know, Penn State playing Michigan, he played against Penn State two of the three times, so I saw him a couple times in person. So to me, Hutchinson would have been my pick. I understand where Trent Baalke comes from based on past experience. What did you think of the pick?
Yeah, Steve, I remember coming on with you guys right around the combine, and there started to be some whispers that Trayvon Walker was climbing and could even be in play for the number one overall pick. And as the draft approached, even the afternoon of draft day, you know, I started calling around, talking to people around the league, people familiar with the Jaguars thinking. This pick came right down to the wire, and Trent Baalke and the front office, they were pounding the table for Walker because they believed that he had more upside. They believed they could get more out of his athleticism, but the best was yet to come for Trayvon Walker, and that Aiden Hutchinson was more of the finished product. That was kind of the feeling around the league. And, you know, talking to an executive in the NFC, he basically told me that if he were in the Jaguars spot, he would have taken Hutchinson because you can fall asleep at night knowing that you're going to hit a triple, to borrow the baseball metaphor, every week, every down. He's consistent. He is what he is. He has a high motor. But with Trayvon Walker, you could be hitting a single, or you might get that grand slam, that walk-off grand slam to end the game. So I think the Jaguars were really betting on that there's more to Trayvon Walker than we've seen at his time in Georgia. And time will tell if they made the right call.
Right, exactly. Hey, obviously, being on this show, you're going to be asked about the Steelers and the Eagles. So let's start with the Steelers draft. What did you think of the pick of Kenny Pickett, first of all? And then what did you think of the pick of George Pickens, considering he is a mixed bag when it comes to off the field?
Yeah, I thought that the Kenny Pickett pick made a lot of sense for the Steelers, only because he was the closest thing to a franchise quarterback in this class. He had the measurables. You know, he runs in a pro-style offense at Pitt. The right. league was obviously more comfortable with him than the other quarterbacks. Not to mention he shares a facility with the Pittsburgh Steelers, so they know him better than everybody.
And not only that, Matt Canada at one point had been his coach at Pitt.
For sure. So there's a lot of knowledge there. There's a lot of comfort there, which I think you needed in this class because of all of the question marks about the other quarterbacks available in this draft. And Pickens is a guy who I think, you know, from a skill set standpoint, you drop him into that wide receiving core with Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool and, of course, Pat Freiermuth, the tight end. And he's a guy that can be a viable third or fourth option with the upside of being even better than that. So I think that they did a nice job of getting Pickens as a weapon for Pickett.
I think there's no doubt about Pickens' talent. But I don't know if he has the, you know, from 30,000 feet, I don't know if he has the maturity.
And if there's an organization that's built to handle that, Steve?
Yes, it is the Pittsburgh Steelers. You're right. Yeah, Matt, you're right. I agree with that.
The consistency there, Mike Tomlin's program, the coaching staff has, you know, dealt with players with off-the-field issues and concerns before. It's one of those deals where if they were comfortable with him, I think that they were comfortable with themselves getting him to keep his head screwed on straight.
When you look at the Eagles draft, you have to include A.J. Brown and the trade that Howie Roseman made. How do you evaluate Philadelphia?
Yeah, Steve, I thought they were one of the biggest winners of the NFL draft. I put them right up there with the Baltimore Ravens, the Kansas City Chiefs, and in a lot of ways, teams like the Detroit Lions and the Jets. I thought that this was arguably the best draft of Howie Roseman's tenure, mm-hmm. in part because of the trade for A.J. Brown, because you've now set Jalen Hurts up to prove it, whether he's a franchise quarterback or not, dropping right. him into an offense that already has Miles Sanders, Devonta Smith, and Dallas Goedert. And then you look at, you get a legitimate space-eating, run-stuffing with pass rush upside defensive tackle in round one out of Georgia. And I just look at what they were able to do. They let the board come to them. They found value. And coming away with N'Kobe Dean, who yes. was sliding on Friday night, I had mm-hmm. two teams tell me there was an issue with his pec and an issue with his meniscus, and there was a feeling around the league that he might be facing a quote-unquote redshirt year. But the Eagles are kind of fortunate there that if he's fully healthy and he's ready to go day one, as they expect, you got a top 10 talent in round four, yeah. If he's not healthy, you know, they can sort of afford to sit back and plug him into the defense next year, a year where they have two first round picks, right. and you'd be dropping a top 15 talent into their defense next year. So I thought the Eagles had one of the stronger drafts of anybody in the league.
Jahan Dotson went to the Washington Commanders at 16. What do you think of the fit?
I think it's a great fit. I just look at their offense. I think it's very similar to what James Franklin and Mike Yurkic ran in Penn State a year ago. You look at the weapons they have around them in Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, Antonio Gibson. You have to pay attention to a lot of these guys. And then you look over at Jahan Dotson. And I see DeSean Jackson in his prime when I watch Jahan Dotson. I see a guy who can take the top off of defense, might be the best ball tracker in this entire class, smooth route runner. And there's going to be opportunities for him because of the weapons that are around him. Now, I don't know that Carson Wentz is going to maximize Jahan Dotson, so to speak, but I think that he has the opportunity to be the guy who makes two or three big game-changing catches per game, as he did at Penn State. So I really like the fit there, and I don't think that he could have landed in a better spot.
All right, so there was a quote from Mel Kiper Jr. years ago, and I think he was talking about the Colts. He said, they just don't get how the draft works or something like that. I think he was talking about the Colts. So in this particular year in 2022, give me a couple of teams where you sat back and says, I'm not so sure they know how the draft works.
You know, this is going to sound counterintuitive. The New England Patriots. I thought that they reached. I don't know if they just have a different draft board than everybody else, but I wasn't really sure what the Patriots were doing throughout that draft, especially on night one. So I think New England was a team that really hurt themselves. And I look at the New Orleans Saints, and it's funny that Mel Kiper has that quote because obviously Mike Ditka, when he was head coach and GM of the Saints, traded his entire draft for Ricky Williams.
Ricky Williams.
They almost did the same thing here with Chris Olave. Now, I really like the player, but to trade up and give up their first-round pick next year and then make a trade to move up to get Chris Olave, he better be better than Michael Thomas, and Michael Thomas better be healthy to make that kind of an impact, because I just don't know that you can trade that much draft capital for a wide receiver, although the counterpoint is we're seeing wide receivers are valued more than ever. They're valued higher than ever.
Right.
And if they think he's going to be the best receiver in one of the best receiver draft classes we've seen in maybe a decade, that's fine. But if you think you're getting Ja'Marr Chase and Chris Olave, and that's why you gave up all those draft picks, I think they might be a little disappointed.
Does free agency figures in, does New Orleans make up for it because they signed Tyrann Mathieu?
That certainly helps. That certainly helps soften the blow, you know. And you look at that division, and you're starting with two wins against the Carolina Panthers, and you're looking at a division where, other than Tampa Bay, it's pretty wide open, right? And if Jameis Winston comes back and is playing at the same level he was playing at or better before he got hurt last year, maybe the Saints make some noise and maybe Olave figures into being that kind of a weapon. I love the Mathieu signing. I just don't know that I would have handled the draft the way New Orleans did.
Right. No, I read you completely on that. You mentioned the Jets at one point. So the Jets and the Giants both had multiple picks. How do you think they fared in terms of how they handled the draft?
I think that as far as night one winners go, I think that they were both among the biggest winners.
Yes.
I don't know that even in the wildest dreams, East Rutherford, that they would have believed that Kayvon Thibodeau and Evan Neal would be there at pick number five and pick number seven. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's already a home run of a draft, and you might have the chance to land the defensive year and a cornerstone offensive tackle. The Jets, I thought, had, again, one of maybe the five best drafts in the entire league.
Right.
I just thought that they were another one of those teams that did what they had to do. They surrounded their young quarterback with weapons. They had major help in the defense, especially in the secondary, taking Sauce Gardner. So I really like what the Jets did. I like what the Giants did. And, you know, we might be looking back in 5 years' time at this draft being a weekend that turned the fortunes of New York football around.
Right. The Ravens, interesting, because Brown ends up going to Hollywood Brown ends up going to Arizona. Yet a lot of people are saying that, look, they picked one winner after another in the draft. What did you like about the Ravens draft?
I loved all of it. It's hard for me to single out. I mean, this is what the Ravens do, right?
Right.
Every single year, the board plays out, and they trust their board, and you look and you're like, how the heck was that guy available, and how did he wind up in Baltimore? I mean, you know, I talked to people going into the draft who told me that Kyle Hamilton was the best player in this draft overall, and he might go to more Pro Bowls than anybody in this class. Ham with your first pick. You get Tyler Linderbaum, a center who I know you're familiar with out of Iowa, who might be a future All-Pro or better than that at center.
If he's healthy in his career, Matt, he will be. He's an outstanding center, and he can run.
For sure. I see a lot of Jason Kelsey when I watch Tyler Linderbaum.
Yep.
He's
agreed.
The comp that I've made there. And, you know, David Ajabo falls to that in a similar situation where the Eagles kind of force it back and let him get healthy. I just love that they collected talent and found value in every round, as they typically do in Baltimore.
Always a pleasure, Matt. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it, and the great analysis as always.
Enjoyed it, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Positive point of view. No.
Hey, I love Lombo.
He's usually speaks highly of you.
Yeah,
usually.
He does remember me when because he was still at his days at 97.5 in Philly, because I was an intern there when he was a host.
Like I said, he mostly speaks highly of you.
Exactly.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
All right, quick, have you with us on the show today, sponsored by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com. So, obviously, we are, college sports, I think it's going to look a lot different. Let's be generous here, 5 years from now. And we're in the process of it right now. I think what Gene Smith, the Ohio State athletic director, he's one of those guys, to be honest with you, when he speaks, I do listen. I feel like he's got the pulse of it, and he's also somebody that gives logical reasoning behind his opinions. And he was talking about the NCAA having nothing to do at all with college football, and the college football needs to dictate its own rules. But he wants to maintain the NCAA as an important part of this. In part, look, the NCAA basketball tournament contract runs through 2032, for goodness sake. Still has 10 more seasons to go. So you're not going to be running out in the NCAA anytime soon. For that particular reason, it's already in place. You don't want to set up your own basketball tournament. What the heck? You've got one already that's $1 billion a year. All right. But when it comes to college football, they do need an entity that runs it. I think college basketball needs that as well. The NCAA needs to have... Some people think Dan Gavitt's, like, because he runs the tournament, is like a de facto commissioner, and that's not true. He's the guy that runs the tournament. Now, would he be a good choice to be a power broker in college basketball? Yes, he's a smart, logical, well-respected by everybody guy. A lot of people mention the name Jay Billis. Well, college football needs that, too. They need to have somebody in that spot. In college football playoff, which is incorporated, Bill Hancock's in charge of it. And again, another, like Dan Gavitt, well-respected by virtually everybody in the business. The college football probably does need that. And they also, at the same time, can't be sitting there. And I'm talking about the 130 FBS schools. Look, it's a different ball game at that level. And it's a different ball game in Power 5 than it is in Group of 5. I mean, in a Group of 5, for goodness sakes, I mean, Penn State draws 110,000 in its stadium. You go to a Group of 5 school that's sitting there right now. I mean, let's pick SMU. They're a Group of 5 school. My goodness, it takes them 3 games, maybe 4, to get to 110,000. Let's say it does that in a day. It's a different game at this level in terms of the finances of it. And I think there are some proposed rules out there that I like. Because of the transfer portal, you need to make an adjustment. And the transfer portal adjustment needs to be, you can't just sit there and have 25 scholarships in a given year. You may lose, you know, a couple guys turn pro early, 18 guys graduate, and you've got 10 people in the transfer portal. Well, you've gone from 85 to 55. You're only allowed to get 25. That gets you back to 80? No. No. Yeah, you've got to be able to have the ability to bring in whatever numbers you need to bring in, that with 85 being a cap. in a given year. I agree with that proposal. Having two transfer portal windows, last Saturday of November up to signing day in December. That's about 16 days, 17 days, give or take, depending on a given year, where you can put your name in. Now, after that, you can still, doesn't mean you have to put your name in and then you make your choice in that time frame, but that's the time frame you're allowed to put your name in. You can't put it in before, and if you don't put it in by signing day, you can't go back and another chance to go in the portal till April 15th, which is the second one from April 15th to May 1st. That's fine, because programs need to be allowed the ability to have roster construction. And then there are the TV contracts. I'm going to get into that in the next half hour as well. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Lincoln, or Ford Kia Hyundai. No doubt the best new brands out there, with great warranties, by the way. And not only that, but also great pre-owned inventory. And when you look at the great pre-owned inventory, it's backed up by the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. I mean, they go over every vehicle. Not only that, a fabulous service department that makes it one-stop vehicle shopping. Whether it happens to be routine or inspections or the difficult stuff. I mean, where you need diagnostics, they can handle it all. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. So let's get to the TV part of this for a moment. I talked about college football does need to have autonomy. They've got some, but they need a complete autonomy. They really can't have... The NCAA doesn't have much to do with what they do, except maybe enforcement of rules. They can enforce their own rules. Right? But you can't break away from the NCAA completely, because the college basketball tournament, and they've got a TV contract that runs through 2032. So you know what? You don't want to break away from that part. But when it comes to football, the NCAA, which already has a limited role in football to begin with, there's got to be an understanding that what they're doing with FBS football is different than what they are doing. I apologize, Matt. I don't have whatever reason the call didn't come up, so I apologize to Tom in Arizona. How about that? Tom, how are you? I'm sorry if I made you wait at all. Appreciate your patience.
Hey, Steve, love the show. Appreciate your time today.
Appreciate you very much. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, so I'm a lifetime Penn State fan. My dad graduated in 78. He's had season tickets since early 80s. And it seems in the last few years, we've seen a lot of the Penn State football players go to the NFL. Several have thrived, done well, even we're not talking about just, you know, Saquon or Miles, but even in the O-line, you know, D-line. And I guess my question is, it doesn't seem like Penn State as a whole has a lot to show for, you know, having all that great talent minus maybe the 2016 Big Ten Championship. You know, it just seems like maybe in the last couple of years, I know COVID and all that, but it just seems like they're 500. Are we missing something here in the progression of, I mean, they're getting great talent, top five, you know, going to the NFL draft, thriving there. But it doesn't seem like there's as much maybe in the college realm to show for the success we've had streaming people into the next level.
You need, Tom, first of all, your assessment's correct about the talent they've been able to bring in here and get to the NFL. And, you know, like the, you know, the Micahs and, you know, those have gone on and done very well in the NFL. So the question is, okay, is it translating enough to this level? And when you look at that four-year stretch from 16 to 19, they won 42 games. And in that span, they also won two New Year's Six games, a Fiesta Bowl and a Cotton Bowl. So that was a really good stretch. The last 2 years, you know, to be honest with you, Tom, I really can't explain really the last couple of years. I mean, COVID, yeah, okay, I got that. I think every program across the country, even the ones that won, it was so strange. I mean, take my word, it was strange.
Sure.
Last year, they're 5-0, and they're winning 17-3 at Iowa. And then the one guy you couldn't get hurt gets hurt. And then the one guy on defense you couldn't get hurt gets hurt, P.J. Mustipher. Like, I remember saying to Jack when the game was over, I said, if you could handpick two guys that Penn State could not lose, one on each side of the ball, you'd handpick each one of those. When, in order to win at this level, you've got to be great or be really, really good. How about that? Really, really good at all levels. Right? So you have to have a really good to great secondary. You have to have really good to great linebackers, really good to great defensive line. You see where I'm going here, every position. And you feel like at most of the position groups, Penn State's been there. But you feel like there's always been a position group that wasn't quite. How about that? You know, and I know a lot of people will point to the offensive line as being one of them and getting consistency out of that, because you do have to be dominating and physical in the trenches. There are moments where the offensive line has been really good, and there have been moments where the offensive line brought with it questions. And that's one that you need to look at along the way. And I just feel like each one of those groups has to be really good to great. If the college football playoff had been expanded to 12 back in 2016, Penn State would have made it 4 years in a row. So it's the last 2 years that we're really looking at. And when I look at the game with Ohio State in 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21, Penn State won in 16. I feel like there's one play each half that they're missing. I mean, even this past year, that one play was the fumble that Cage ran back. It's the only mistake Penn State made all night. You're like, ugh, you got to be kidding me. Really? And it's one, and in the season where Sean Clifford really didn't turn the ball over all that often, that was one of those that stuck out. And that's that margin of error you're looking at. And somehow they got to find a way when they get into those games with an Ohio State that they find that one play each half. Does that sound fair to you?
Yeah, I mean, and I guess also in a follow-up, I mean, you're there every day. Do you feel like that maybe this year is better than maybe other years in the past?
You know, Jack Hamm and I were talking on Tuesday, and he said to me, he says, I don't know, he says, I feel bullish about this team. And there's a lot about this team I really like. Now, I'm going to reserve judgment about how good I think the offensive line can be, because I want to see it in practical application. And they had so many guys out for periods of time in the spring that when they finally got to the five that I'm looking at, Tom, which would be Wallace, And Wallace was up and down last year. Everybody knows that. But Wallace was a lot better in the spring. And I was, you know, and Olu looks like he's going to be a really good left tackle. And Scruggs was out there every day. So I'm comfortable with those three. When Tangwall was in there at the guard spot, I liked him. I mean, I think Tangwall's got great upside. And getting Sal Wormley back really helps. He would have been the starting left guard last year. Now they've got him at, they've been moving him, they've been playing him at right guard in the spring. But getting him back helps. Now can you get some depth behind it? And this is where Hunter Norzad is going to compete for a starting job. I can see Nick Dawkins being able to spell players really in any one of the five positions. And I, you know, and let's see what happens with JB Nelson, who was in and out of the lineup in the spring, and see what Drew Shelton does when he gets here, and see, let's see, and what the status of Bryce Effner would be. They have the possibility of maybe having, let's say, a minimum of eight that can legitimately play. Now can they play together and be consistent? They also need some depth at linebacker, I think, Tom. I would like to see how the depth at linebacker develops along the way. And so I want to check that out. All everywhere else, you know, three tight ends all can play. The Tinsley kid's a huge addition in that wide receiver core. I like that group a lot. I think Saunders can play. Evans can play. The running backs, you're going to love Singleton. I mean, you really are. And then, the, you know, the kid from Florida, Catron Allen. He's really good, and it's, he, I don't think he gets enough conversation. Sean had his best spring, there's no question, and I really like the job Vayu did. So you feel comfortable. You've got two game-ready quarterbacks going into the season. You got secondary is deep. Defensive line is deep. They've got enough rush ends now because you know we all know what Robinson to go with Adisa Isaac, you know, deny Dennis Sutton. You know, I'm really anxious to see him in the preseason. They've got six defensive tackles that all can play. So they've got that kind of depth, but I want to see how the offensive line plays out, and I want to see how the depth at linebacker plays out. So those would be the two areas I think would take the longest look.
Yeah. Hey, well, thanks for having more to give, Steve Jones. Appreciate you.
John Harris. John Harris, that's going to be on, that's going to be the mantra on this show forever because of Johnny.
That's awesome. Hey, thanks for your time. Looking forward to the season.
Tom, thanks so much for your call. It means a lot. Thank you. Yeah, it's you know, that's what you're waiting to see.
You got more to give, Steve Jones.
I'm trying, John. I'm trying. That's what I want to see. What, you know, can they get some depth at linebacker? Because guys will get banged up. I think the move of John Sutherland there. It's interesting. So, he's too light. He's too this. Look, today's game is not played the same way anymore. A lot of teams, and as you know, I've been going through my game preps. And I try to do that in mostly in April and May. And I'm up to Indiana now, so I'm up to game number 9. And you got a lot of, you know, some people are playing standard 4-3s, but a lot of them are playing hybrids now. You know, 4-2-5s. Indiana's playing 3-3-5 as their base defenses. John Sutherland, who I think is better closer to the line of scrimmage, you know, not as a defensive end, obviously, but I think he's a better player closer to the line of scrimmage. He plays the run well enough, but he also gives you that added bonus of being a guy that has played in the secondary, thus he knows how to play the pass. I think he'll bring with him the versatility that makes a big difference for that defense. But you also need to have the depth. And look, you know, between Elston and King, they've got depth there. You know, catchers there. Button has got to come on here. I mean, Button has got to make some strides forward. I mean, Button was up and down during the course of the spring. Jamari's got to be, you know, he's got to be better. I think he's got the talent to be better. Moving Wheatley to safety was Big move. That helped. Wheatley is, you can tell, length, and boy, does he see the ball. He sees the field really well. So that was a good call by Tom. Appreciate it very much. But the TV contracts, as getting back to what I was talking about before, are going to be really important, because I think that when you're looking at what the NFL did, they took the Thursday package, which is considered by the networks the least desirable package, and they went with a non-linear option by going to Amazon. The NFL, of course, you know, I mean, that shows, again, the ability to understand what you, the viewer, are doing now. I would not doubt, let me put it this way, I wouldn't be surprised. I have no inside knowledge as to what the Big Ten is going to do, but I wouldn't be surprised if they have some smaller package that's one of the non-linear ones. A, they'll get the money, and B, they can put a few games on it by using an Amazon, an Apple, whatever it may be. And that's going to set the tone for everybody else. Now, do I see the Big 12 getting an increase? They'll get an increase, but not that much. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the Big 12 took a step back in its number. But George Kliavkov in the Pac-12, I can see them getting an increase. ACC, they're stuck. That's why every time I hear somebody say, they ought to get out of the Big 10 and go to the ACC. Okay, be careful what you wish for. Because the ACC is not, financially, is not going anywhere for another decade and a half. For a decade and a half, they're not going anywhere. The ability to get money that you need is going to be, I mean, that opens the door. Now, it's how do you take advantage of it? And I can't wait to see the finished product of the new weight room and area that they have. And I think the next part is you got to get a training table. And I know that there's space inside Greenberg. They could take the part of that space and they could turn it into a training table. It takes money to do that, but it's great to have it more controlled instead of walking over to Pollock and going up the hill and coming back. You can have a better handle on your student-athletes' nutritional needs when it's all within the confines of your area. And nutrition is critical to what's going on. Lisa understands that. Meanwhile, over here, every time you turn around, Luke, want a cookie? It's like, hey, Mark, hey, Daddy's got some Oreos. Hey. I worry about you.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
Lisa's like, hey, how about some salad, kids?
She does always make sure we get fruits and veggies in every meal.
Yeah, but that's because you're taking balance of nature. That's the only reason we can get it to end of you. It's like, all right, so here are your three tablets. Okay, great. I got all my veggies for the day. We're good. Daddy brought home ice cream. Again, you're just trying to win the favor of the youngsters. I know how you operate. If Daddy gives you some ice cream, do you promise to root for the Sixers? Hey, now, in a lot of states, that's called bribery. All right, we'll come back with more more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay. It's interesting. I was reading an article. We know about the controversy Phil Mickelson has had with his comments about the Saudi tour they made to Alan Shipnuck, who's an outstanding writer, by the way. And obviously, it's created a rift between them. And he writes that Mickelson is a polarizing character, and both his supporters and detractors were able to tell me everything. but there are often ornate agreements about what material could be used and how it had to be sourced. One high roller who had a history of gambling with Mickelson summoned me to his office to provide valuable background. But not only was I not allowed to record the conversation, I also couldn't take notes. He wanted no evidence we had spoken. This is a gent who told me a story that would have been international news, but it isn't in the book because we were speaking off the record, and I always honor those agreements. See, that's why Alan's a great writer. Now, he tells a couple of stories, and, you know, these will be the good side of it. All right. If Ryan Palmer's wife, Jennifer, unfortunately gets breast cancer, and we know about Amy Mickelson battling breast cancer in 2009. And he said that Ryan Palmer says, he says he comes over and he said, I had to tell him about what was going on. He pulled me in for a big hug. It lasted a long time. Then he said, okay, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to put you in touch with Dr. Tom Buchholz at Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. He's going to get you the best doctors and surgeons in the world. They're going to take care of you guys, and Jennifer's going to be okay. That night I was on the phone with Dr. Buchholz, and everything Phil said came true. I've never stopped being grateful for what he did for me and my family. Then there's the story of David Finn. I wish I had a little more time here. David suffers from a disorder that withers his limbs and has robbed him of his ability to speak. For some reason, Mickelson in the 2005 PGA Championship sees him on the 14th hole at Baltusrol. He takes a glove out and autographs the glove, and he says, hi, buddy, thanks so much for coming. Here's a souvenir for you. David's father said, so many people don't know how to act around severely disabled children. Pity is the worst possible emotion. The glove was a wonderful gesture because Phil treated him like a normal kid. And then when Phil won the tournament, this is 2005, his first one, Bones McKay went up to little David and said, Mr. Mickelson would like you to come out and share the trophy ceremony with him. And they've got that picture, and he said, they asked David about what it meant to him. He says, Phil Mickelson was the first person to make me feel special.